Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Before we begin today's episode, I'm going to spend a few seconds telling you about our Patreon, where you can support the show. It's patreon.com/anewwinter, and you get exclusive podcast episodes, and you can donate even a dollar if you want, but everything you give will help me be able to spend more time working on the show. patreon.com/anewwinter. If you don't have the money and want to help, then great. Please rate and review the podcast, because that really does make a huge difference. Thank you.
Winter culture.
Everybody, and welcome to A New Winter Cults and Culture. I'm here with Dan. Hi, Dan.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
Yeah, good. Recovered from Christmas and New Year's.
Yes, that's good.
Ready to assess more music.
I can imagine you cramming down the turkey, going, I need to review more stuff. I need to eat for that energy to review.
And I was like, I haven't wrapped up my 2019 listening, let alone the decade.
Well, yes, exactly. And here we are in 2020. 2020 vision joke insert here. I don't know what it seems to be the thing. And yeah, so today we're going to be talking about the Sigur Rós album. Now I'm going to try and pronounce this. Algaitis Byrjan. Jan, does that sound right?
No. That doesn't sound like words. What are you talking about? What's going on?
It's Icelandic for a good beginning. It reminds me of, I'm totally going off topic now, but my family used to let in French exchange students. Do you remember this? Do you ever remember this?
Yeah.
And they did it for a while. And one person they got whilst I was at uni, it started to not just be kids. It started to be like they used to do adults as well that would want to come over and stay with an English family or whatever and all this. And one time I came back and she was like, oh, this middle-aged, white guy, fine, just normal guy. But I was like, it is a bit weird that he's just like living in my house. And we were all having dinner because I was back from uni. We sat there and it was his like second day or something. And mum was like, oh yeah, we went to the science museum and we saw this, we went under whatever, I don't know. And it's like, okay. And then my mum puts on this like weird like performance when she has guests sometimes where it's like, what are you doing? Why are you being weird? She acts a certain way. And then we're all like cheersing basically before we're about to eat. I'm like, oh God, here we go. So instead she just goes, oh, she goes, cheers. Or as we say, good learning. It's like, good learning.
What?
Tess was there as well, my wife. You can ask her about it. Good learning. No one says that. who clinks glasses together and says good learning? And I was like, it reminds me of Masters of the Universe, where it was like, what was it, Happy Journey or something like that.
So where did that come from?
I thought she just made it just up. Being an idiot.
I mean, quite like it.
Good learning. It doesn't even make sense. It doesn't, as two words put together, it doesn't even make sense. So when I read like good beginning, it kind of reminded me of that.
Good beginning. It's like an alternative to a happy end.
It's the best. It's parallel to, you could say. That's how you want a happy end to start, is with a good beginning. It's a good beginning and a happy end. It was a great experience all round.
But we've run into a problem here already with your pronunciation of that title.
Okay.
How the bloody hell are we going to get through the next hour and a half or whatever?
No, I know.
With all these song titles.
I know. It'll be Icelandic fans will be having so much raucous fun listening to us try and do their language, speak their language.
It's a shame, really, because, you know, this is part of our series of albums that are celebrating an anniversary.
Mm.
So this is the 1999 album.
Yes.
And there were so many other great albums we could have chosen from. Punkorama, yes. Volume 4.
Yeah, that's actually a good one.
The Best of Aztec Camera.
That is good. I'd listen to that. I've probably got that somewhere.
And yet you've gone with Sigur Rós.
Sugar.
Agiatis Biriengin.
Yes, Sugur Rós. Yes, I have, because this was coming up to the height of Sigur Rós for me. So they'd already released Von a couple of years before, which was great. And after this, they released this, well, I don't even know what it's called, really. It's just brackets, just a pair of brackets. And maybe it does have a name, but I've never actually had to say it, so I've never had to actually think about what to call it. It was always like that Sigur Rós album. And it kind of did, that was this, these three albums where this sits in the middle was for me like peak Sigur Rós, because it was a new sound, it was different, and then they kind of started to do other things. They became a bit of a, like a parody of themselves almost. They just had that, it's like they'd nailed their sound and they kept to it, and they tried to add a bit more, like, you know, maybe we shouldn't be down all the time, guys. Let's write some like happy, jolly music. It's like, I don't want you to be happy. I want sad, melancholy, ambient music. Yeah. And this was probably one of my favorite albums of that decade, at least that year. So, yeah, I don't know. What do you know about Sigur Rós, Dan? Anything? What do you know about this album? How are you coming into this?
Yeah, I don't know very much about it. I do remember them being big at the time, you know, people talking about them. And I did check this out. I have heard this album before we discussed doing this show. And I think I heard Tack. And then obviously, you know, I've absorbed some of their music through They Are the Band, the soundtrack's epic, inspiring adverts. So, and I noticed a few tracks on this album that I knew through adverts. So yeah, I'm coming at it really with very little kind of knowledge. This is the first time I think I'd really sat down, given it a proper listen, and tried to absorb the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, just a little bit about the album itself. What do you think of the cover, by the way? So for those who don't know, the cover's like this like sad fetus that's like in utero, basically.
Yeah, it's kind of repellent. I didn't really like it. It's weird, but not weird in like a kind of way that I like weird stuff. It's kind of like sort of a bit hippie new agey.
Hmm.
Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I like it. Funnily enough, I'm going to try. I've been talking to the artist, who's a guy called Gotti. He's going to crucify me for saying this wrong, probably. Gotti Bernhoft. And I'm going to try and see if he can send through a few words, which on how he what happened, basically, how this kind of came together, because I believe he drew this with a biro, basically, with a ballpoint pen. And it's quite cool when you look at some of his other stuff. He's got an Instagram account, which I recommend you go to, which is how, you know, I kind of got in contact with him, which is just Gotti_Bernhoft. And yeah, you'll see the kind of work that he does. It's very similar to this, but I quite like the way, yeah, it's like this alien-like, glowing, just slightly sad baby. Just the idea that it's like, you know, bear in mind, it's called Good Beginning. So it's a bit like, it doesn't get more of a beginning than like a fetus, basically. Yeah. And it's already sad.
It's got wings as well. Like the implication is it's some kind of angel.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never really noticed that, actually. That's interesting. Yeah, I always just look at the massive head.
Yeah, big head. Thing about this that's probably not that interesting, but if you look at the artwork on, say, Spotify or anywhere, the rotation of the fetus is different to how it appeared on the original pressings of the album.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, it used to be kind of like more straight, and then they've rotated it counterclockwise. Maybe to look a bit more comfortable, like it's sitting down.
Oh, yeah, that's strange. I never noticed that either.
Yeah, funny old thing.
I quite like the cover. And apparently inside the booklet, there was the phrase... I'm not going to even try and pronounce it in Icelandic. And if you don't know, it's a cross from Iceland, I should say. It's probably a good way to start. But it says, I gave you, and a plural you, I gave you hope that became a disappointment. This is a good beginning. Whatever that means. I've read here that it's about their previous releases. But I don't know. Oh, what do you think that means?
I don't know. Is it a lyric from one of the songs?
I don't think so. But I wouldn't know.
Yeah. I gave you a good beginning.
Yeah, I gave you hope that became a disappointment. This is a good beginning. It doesn't sound like, you know,
sound pessimistic.
Yeah.
Everything starts out hopeful and good.
Yeah.
They should have followed this album up then with something really awful.
Yeah, but they didn't. They followed it up with something amazing. And apparently they actually, in the early days, they actually made and glued together the cases for the first print of this this release themselves.
Oh, cool.
And apparently some of the CDs were unusable because of the glue. There's glue stains on them, which is quite interesting. As we were discussing just before we started the show, this was actually released, it was released in Iceland on the 12th of June 1999, but it was released in the UK in 2000 and the US in 2001. So because we were like trying to do albums, you know, within 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, whatever, this kind of still works even though we're in 2020, because it's both a 1999 album and a 2000 album, really, isn't it?
So yeah, for us it is, for us.
Certainly.
It was released originally, I'm just looking... on the, I don't know how to pronounce it, Smeklisar label, which is actually quite an iconic Icelandic label. They've done stuff like, the Sugar Cubes and Ghost Digital.
Right.
Other Icelandic bands. And then it came out with Fat Cat in the UK.
Yeah.
Do you know them?
Yeah, only from name. Like, I recognise the name, but I don't know anything they've done. And from reading this.
Yeah, it's like Brighton-based, kind of like indie, like cool alternative kind of electronic or dance music.
Okay.
So I didn't realise they'd been going that long, to be honest. This must have been quite a big release for them. Might have been one that kind of like put them on the map.
Yeah, I think it did. And so, yeah, it's funny you talk about Sugar Cube. So this was produced by, it's their second studio album. It's produced by Ken Thomas. And Ken Thomas... he ended up working with people like Dave Gahan, Wire, the Bongos. Don't know who the Bongos are. Do you know them?
No.
No. And he also did some work with M83 as well, who were pretty big. He started off as being an engineer for bands like Public Image Limited, Buzzcocks, and Sugar Cubes. So it was actually them who introduced him to Sigur Rós after they played him Von, the first album. And he was like, this is great. And he was being more experimental and all this stuff. So, he produced this album, and there on out, they've had a very close relationship. They work together quite frequently. I don't know if they're still doing it to this day, but they definitely did, you know, after this album. This also included their new keyboardist, Kjartan Svensson, who would go on to be their longtime member, and their original drummer, August Gunnarsson, left after the release of this album, and he went on to study graphic design. So I hope he's done well. Good luck to him. And he was replaced by someone called Ori Dyerson, who I believe is still the drummer to this day. And yeah, as you said, like a lot of the music on this album, if you've not heard it before, you might have heard it in adverts or in films. The one film I remember seeing it was in Vanilla Sky with Tom Cruise, mm-hmm. Which was the remake of Open Your Eyes, a Spanish film. Yeah. And this is like the big song that's kind of like at the height of the film, whatever, the not the pinnacle, you know what I mean? The crescendo or whatever of the film at the end, I believe, they play this song. And it's really impactful.
That's the thing. These songs, they seeped into so much of the media of the time.
Mm.
It feels really, it feels really like 2000 when I listen to this.
Yeah. And that's the problem, is because it was one of those things where like people who were musos essentially kind of grabbed onto it very quickly and were like, you know, spread the word, like, you should listen to this. It's amazing. It's different. It's so cool. They're from Iceland and all this. And so it became like the cool thing. And obviously putting them in the films and, you know, creatives using them in adverts and stuff like that, because this was like a hot new sound, not just like a band or like, you know, it was a whole thing as of itself, which is why it's so interesting.
Yeah, it does mean that, so for me, it has dated a bit. When I listened to this, I did feel transported back. And I think, you know, the sound has been built on, progressed and moved on.
Yeah.
So it's a bit difficult coming to it now.
Mm.
Just sort of hearing everything, like, it just makes me think of everything 2000-ish, like movies.
Mm. It's because it's so distinctive as well. Yeah. Like everything about it, the production, sound, like his voice is very distinctive, which you find. The fact that I believe that I've got one upstairs actually, it's called like an Ebo. I think I've used one when we've been playing actually, but essentially it's you put it up against your guitar string, it's like a magnetic kind of thing. And it does these, it makes it sound like it's a bow essentially on your guitar strings. And they do actually use physical bows when they play sometimes.
Does it vibrate the guitar string?
Yeah, it must do. I don't really know how it works. It doesn't actually vibrate it. It's not actually moving that you can see, but it does, I don't know, I don't actually know what it does. To be honest, I've always had one. But it does that kind of like, it makes your electric guitar sound like a violin. So it has these kind of like really washy, I'm kind of talking about the production essentially, but gives it a very, washy, like cool sound, because it's still like an electric guitar. It's still like a distorted effect, but it's got this swelling to it and this kind
like
of
build.
Like
it's weeping.
Yeah, exactly. And it creates these, it can be like really beautiful, but yeah, and you have to have like, it's not that when you're using an Ebo, it's it can be a bit difficult because you've kind of got to get it just right, if that makes sense, to kind of pick up that sound. And, you know, if you've got it a bit too high, a bit too low, it's not rested on the string properly, or, you know, whatever you're doing with your left hand. It's kind of, there's a trick to it, I'm guessing what I'm trying to say. It's like it has a certain nuance to being able to like use it properly and create these kind of beautiful sounds that Sigur Rós do. But yeah, you'll see them when they play live. They do actually, some of them just use an actual bow.
And go back to basics, use a bow.
Yeah, and I've not actually tried that. I don't know how that would work. I think because it's essentially I'm trying to concentrate on doing like one string, one note, and kind of mixing that in rather than just like I'm going at all the strings. But so but it's
interesting. The fear of getting it wrong when you're mucking around with these electromagnetic fields.
Yeah.
You just want to get stuck in with a blumming bow.
Yeah. Have you ever seen them live?
No. What, Ebos or Sigur Rós? Yes,
Sigur Rós.
No. Have you?
So I saw them after Tack, actually on the Tack tour. And I remember I don't really like Tack that much, to be honest, to be brutally honest. And
controversial.
Yeah, I mean, it was all right. But yeah, I didn't enjoy I thought it was, there are songs that which are a bit jolly and there are songs that are still amazing. But I was like, this didn't have, and again, I know I'm always banging on about this, but this didn't have that like melancholy beauty to it. It started for me to become where they were like, we're Sigur Rós and this is our sound and this is what we're going to do. And, you know, we're going to kind of play on that a little bit rather than being like, today, what are you trying to say? What are you trying to do? Do you know what I mean? What kind of tone are you trying to do here? Mm. But when I saw them live, it was all that stuff was great. But like when they were playing that old stuff, I was just like, this is, I just remember throughout the whole thing, I was having like this like ethereal, like out of body experience, just watching the whole thing. Like I was like, this is mad. But the whole time my wife basically was moaning about her feet. she's like, my feet hurt. I'm standing up for too long. I'm like, well, just go fucking sit down. Do something else. Sit on the floor then. Like, we're all standing. She's like, my feet hurt. How long is this going to go on for? How long do you reckon it'll be finished soon? I'm like, oh my God. I'm here having like a moment.
Having a transcendent moment back to earth with a bump.
Yeah, exactly. but yeah, it's not really her thing.
That's you. That baby on the front cover. That's you with your little wings trying to fly and embrace the music. But you're being anchored with a cord.
Umbilical cord, yeah. Someone's dragged me out and I'm crying.
To the physical world.
Yeah. I was always
just
saying
want
that
to fly.
There's because, oh God, this is really sad, but putting together jokes for this stand-up thing that I was going to do a while ago. And one of the things was like being so down that when the doctor, I'm delivering it so poorly, but when I was delivered, and the baby and the doctor slapped my bum, I just gave out a sigh. I just love that image exactly. Instead of crying.
Just put me back in.
Yeah. Just put me back in. Like, this is life. This is the happy beginning. So it did well. Got picked up, as you said, like by Fat Cat and all this stuff. It got released internationally. And yeah, it did put them on the map, especially from Tiny Iceland. Pitchfork put it at number 2, their album of the year, number 8 in their albums of the 2000s.
Really?
Yeah, so they highly regarded in their eyes. And recently there was a 20th anniversary edition that was released, actually, with a live performance and some unreleased demos and all this stuff of songs off the album, which is pretty cool. It's well worth looking at.
Yeah, and I saw that. That's pretty majestic. Mm. And if you're a vinyl buyer, you might want to get your hands on that.
Yeah. And I think it's always like, they've released documentaries and all this on this stuff where they play like in different parts of Iceland or whatever and stuff like that. But when you see them with a big orchestra, when they finally like hit the big time as such, having that like huge sound, it really is quite incredible. So it's worth listening to like the live stuff at this time as well, because it was just, like, they're just making it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's...
The live album itself is a performance from the day of release.
Oh, really? Is it?
Yeah. So it's, like, right then and there. They're probably at the height of, like, having practiced and performed it and recorded it and then unveiling it.
Right. That's cool. I didn't realise that. I just knew it was a... it's, like, with a backing orchestra or something. I thought it was... I didn't realise it was the day of release. Okay, should we get into it then?
Okay, let's go.
This album, by the way, is 71 minutes long. So when you put it on, like you're gonna go through a journey. But we start with something called intro.
Intro.
And yeah, let's have a listen to it now. So that was the intro. Dan, what's your feeling immediately after listening to that?
Warm and I suppose engaged and curious because it's quite mysterious. It's nice. It reminds me of some sort of like 60s-ish kind of Beach Boys-y, even Beatles-y like harmonies. And then with some of that kind of like, is it like some stuff playing backward masking?
Yeah, so it's actually the title track, played backwards. Yeah, so you were quite right in noticing that.
And then the last few sort of seconds of just sort of sparse, of like a little palate cleanser.
Yeah.
As we go a 10-minute opening track.
I saw it that it was The Womb. But that's, you know, when you hear like womb sounds, like we had it when one of our kids was a baby, you have like a thing to help them go to sleep. And one of the sounds is what's supposed to sound like a heartbeat from inside the womb or whatever. And so it's that kind of, as you were saying, it's that warm sensation. So I imagine it's to do with the cover, it's to do with beginnings and all this stuff. So it's a nice note to kind of start everything up on.
Good call.
Yeah. It also reminds me when you were saying about like, you know, with the song playing backwards. Did you ever listen to that Justin Bieber thing slowed down to like whatever it was? That someone took a Justin Bieber song and they slowed it down to whatever, like a 40th of what it's supposed to be going at.
Yeah.
And it sounds exactly like a Sigur Rós song. Really slow, really weird. It's honestly, like if you listen to it, it's a really beautiful piece and it's just a Justin Bieber song slowed down. It's mad. I'll send you a link to it actually, so you can have a look.
But yeah, remarkable.
You guys should check that out. See, I'll try and remember to put it in the show notes as well. So
you're equating the fetus there waiting in the womb to me, the avid listener. I'm hearing these muffled sounds and just waiting for something to happen, waiting for my head to emerge from the audio vulva.
Yeah. Wow, that's a punk band name right there. and it brings you straight into, right, Sveffen Gur Englar, which is that actually how it's pronounced? You're just making that up?
Just guessing. Svengi Englar.
Speaker to Deutsch. It's Sleepwalking Angels.
Uh-huh.
So let's give that a listen.
Thank you.
Goran Eriksson. What did you think about that?
It's very nice. And that is sort of the blueprint for what I think of the Sigur Rós song. So I suppose it's sort of iconic now.
Yeah. I mean, I believe this was used in an O2 advert.
I definitely recognise it from stuff.
Yeah. If it wasn't, that's a UK mobile like network provider, basically, for people that don't know, because I don't know where else it is. For me, this is like one of, I know it's most well known, but it's also one of my favourite tracks on the album, just because, as you said, it's uniquely like Sigur Rós. It's the archetypal song by them, in terms of it goes from, it's quite dreamy, it's quite ambient, soft, but then they do, and what I always love is that towards the end, it kind of gets a bit like nastier and rockier and like bigger, if that makes sense, and it becomes a bit more epic. And for me, those are like my favourite kind of Sigur Rós songs, where it starts with something small and gentle, and then it becomes this like opus, basically, like this huge, like mind-altering sound that just like blows your world wide open. And this might not be the perfect example of it, because I think there are other songs that do it better that they've done, but this is definitely that type of song.
Totally. And you can hear in this, I think, some of the influence that they then had on the rest of the decade.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, you can hear the influence it had on huge bands like Radiohead, and some of the kind of more like ambient indie bands that came up in the middle of that decade, you know, like Animal Collective, and especially a lot of that sounds kind of like Panda Bear to me.
Yeah, I can see that.
I think introducing more and more ambient textures and some interesting electronics. Into sort of more mainstream kind of what would have been guitar-based indie rock bands.
Yeah. It's also, again, his singing, the way it's just so high-pitched when it needs to be. And it sounds like Alien-esque, basically. That it doesn't sound like it's made on this planet. And it can be really hit or miss sometimes, stuff like that. But I just feel it works so beautifully with the music. And there's like there's a femininity to it. It's got this, and I mean this for like the whole of their sound, really. There's this like quite, and when I say fragile, feminine side, not to say that women are fragile, but, you know, it's definitely a fragile song, but there's like a strength in it as well. And the way that he sings and like the beauty behind it is things I associate with more of a, which I would not associate coming from like four, you know, guys in their mid-20s or whatever they were at this point. It's just interesting. Like, it was interesting at the time for me, and even going back and listening to it now, as you said, like, it did inspire a lot and it's very much of that time. But I know we always say this, but I'm just like, there's no one doing this kind of thing. It doesn't have to be this either. Do you know what I mean? It's like the fact that, you know, that sound has, as you said, it's evolved and it's become other different things. But there's still like no one really. You listened to that song back then, you'd be like, I've not heard anything really like this before, if you didn't know who they were. And when was the last time that you can say that you said that?
Yeah.
These days.
I don't know if you could get away with doing something like this now, because it's kind of, it's been done, they've done it.
Yeah.
And that to me, again, like, because I'm coming at this retrospectively, like, I can't come at it fresh. So I'm kind of thinking, like, you know, I've kind of heard a lot of this before.
Yeah.
But what I've heard has come after.
Yeah. But I think what I'm trying to say, kind of get over, is that you're right, absolutely, like it's so been done now, but there's nothing that I feel like is like, this is like a new cool and again, I'm always saying this, we're both always saying this, but there's no like thing, which is just like, this is uniquely this, and it's very interesting because everything just sounds like everything else. And so I'm kind of trying to get over the impact that hearing something like this would have had to me at that time, where I was like, what the fuck, basically, is this? I love it, and I need more of it, and I don't understand it.
A fresh new sound.
Yeah, basically, is all I'm trying to say. And
for the 2020s, people, that's what we want to hear.
Yeah, it's true. And me and Dan were saying just before we opened the show, because we're going through, like, you know, top things of the decade and all this, and musically, it's been a bit of a void, and there'll be people out there going, oh, whether this was released and that was released. But we're saying, like, we're going through stuff, and it's like, there's not been that much great stuff that's been released over the last 10 years, I don't think, to be pretty honest. Even though we were saying that there's good tracks, but there's no, like, albums that, you know, it's a body of work where you're like, this is, mwah, oh, this is so tasty. I love every bit of it. And you're just not getting much of that these days.
There's nothing galvanizing. You know, there's no real vocal albums for me that kind of spearheaded a new musical movement or sound or cultural movement. And but you can look to, you know, previous decades and pinpoint those.
Yeah,
I think.
And you could hate Sigur Rós, but the fact that they were kind of doing something, going out there and doing something different, is pretty amazing. And like, when I think about like my kids' generation, or a generation that would have grown up where, like, you know, they're like 15, 16 during the last decade, where it's like, this is kind of the stuff, here's the new fresh stuff they're listening to. I'm just like, man, I really feel like they didn't, you know, and I'm not saying it's the equivalent of like when punk first came on the scene or whatever, or anything like that. But, you know, there's to a degree, like, music has evolved less and less to the point now where I'm just like, what are kids like getting excited about? What's like the new fresh sound that's coming out these days? Mm-hmm. Like, what is it? I don't know what it is.
But let's not get too carried away, because this kind of sound, it did exist.
Yeah.
Sort of orchestral indie. I mean, Radiohead had already been dabbling with that kind of sound, and, you know, lots of ambient kind of rock and
dance music, and stuff,
I think,
like,
getting a bit more introspective, electronic music. But somehow they've pulled everything together to create something fresh and unique.
Yeah. I mean, I was listening to stuff like Cocteau Twins and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Which has a similar, it's kind of a similar sound. Actually, there's a little bit about them later, which I'll get onto.
But I think they're a bit darker, though.
Yeah, they are a bit darker. But it was, I think, I don't know, I'm kind of labouring the point here, but as you said, not to kind of make too much of a big thing about it. But yeah, everything's been kind of done before. But yeah, when I heard this track specifically from this album, I was blown away.
But very twinkly.
It's very twinkly.
Very twinkly. It's very...
It changed my world. Yeah, it's very twinkly.
I do like some of the instrumentation, especially earlier on when they're just sort of starting to sort of build up this kind of world before it all, you know, blows up and flows over by the end of the track.
Yeah.
Really nice, like warm kind of organ chord sounds. Nice, like, is that guitar feedback? It's not like aggressive or dirty sounding. It's just like...
Mm. Well, that's the kind of Ebo stuff that I was talking to you about.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of what
there it is.
That kind of is. But yeah, I mean, as it could be feedback as well. I don't, you know, obviously I wasn't there, but that's the kind of sound that the Ebo should be giving you, really. Yeah, as you said. And it's a bit of feedback, yeah.
So, I mean, that's it, really, then. They just did some like indie ambient stuff, but they did it with an Ebo. And then they got someone to sing high.
Yeah, that's the strategy. Like, do it in a big, like, echo chamber or something. Go into a church and record it. All right, well, let's get on. We talked way too much about that. That was my fault. Sorry, went off on one. But let's talk about the next track. Let's have a listen to that, which is Staral Fur, which I believe is translated into something very Christmassy, Staring Elf.
What?
Like Dances with Wolves, but the Christmas version.
Ha 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 ha.
Let's have a listen. Staring elf.
I'd be really intrigued to hear the lyrics to this song. I'd like to know more about this staring elf, but I can't understand
you can hear
a sobbing
the lyrics
word
by listening. You can hear the lyrics by listening to the song.
It's no good.
But
it's all sung in blooming. It's all in Swedish or whatever.
Icelandic. What's wrong with you? Jeez.
It's a good job we're doing this show now, because by the end of the month, this album won't be available to listeners in the UK.
Why?
After we've Brexited.
Oh, right, yeah. That's true, only a few weeks left.
Yeah. No more foreign rubbish.
No more beautiful Icelandic music.
We can do the best of Ashcat Camera, finally.
Are they British? I don't remember.
So a lot of this does walk a bit of a fine line for me, where it gets too sweet natured sometimes.
You're talking about the song now.
Yeah, sorry. Right. not the political situation in the UK.
Right.
Yeah, it's a little too saccharine for me, this one. Some of those strings get a bit kind of gloopy.
Yep.
It's all a bit too nice. And some of those, you know, the kind of like effects on the vocal where it's been processed. And again, this is the thing of like it being of its time. I can't detach it from what was going on. But I just think of adverts for mobile phones now whenever there's that like distortion on a vocal.
Yeah.
So it sounds like they're coming over the end of a telephone line.
Mm-hmm.
It's too syrupy. Too syrupy for me, this one.
So I have to agree. This is like a stereotypical... This is a kind of... If someone... Put it this way. If you're at a party, this is what I imagine someone would be like, have you listened to Sigur Rós? You should listen to this track. And it would be I would immediately go like, this is not that great. Because it feels like it's one of the more accessible ones, because you're right, it is a bit sweeter and a bit more cheesy.
Mm.
And I think it's also been used a lot. I quite like how they mess around with the sounds in terms of like the production bit, right? That little bit where it goes a bit quiet in the middle and near the end and all this, but the actual meat of the song with the big strings and all this, I'm just like, that's the stuff I don't really, not really into. Like, and as well, it's great in front of an orchestra and it's like this big, sweet sound, but I'm like, yeah, that's not really... That's not the Sigur Rós I'm into. And I feel like maybe like a quarter to half of like Sigur Rós fans are more on this side of the fence, if that makes sense. And I feel like that's the kind of stuff that they leaned into more as they went on.
Okay.
That's just my opinion. Yeah. And I'd be able to listen to valid arguments against that, but just very, very generally, I do feel like this kind of sound is fine, but there are much better tracks on the album.
Yeah, there's interesting stuff going on in this track, like you said, but if I was a producer, get that orchestra off, bring the Ebow back.
Yeah.
Bam.
I mean, I don't mind it, but you're right. It just feels like it's ready to be put onto an advert. It feels like it's like perfectly primed. Apparently, the strings are palindromic as well, if that's how you say it. So they could be played the same forwards and backwards. That's interesting. Little factoid for you there. Okay, well, let's move on to the next one, which is, okay, let's try and say this. Flugelflölsarin.
Flying to the moon.
You're not far off.
Flying.
Well, you're quite far off. It's got the word flying.
Flying to, what's further than the moon? Mars? Flying to Mars?
Mars is further than the moon, yes. Dan, did you go to school?
No, but I did go to the Science Museum over Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah, you're looking in the wrong direction. The fly's saviour.
What?
What?
I watched The Lord of the Flies over Christmas.
Yeah, and you know at the end where they all get saved by one guy?
Yeah.
This is what the song's about.
Oh, cool. Oh, great. Oh.
So let's listen to Flugu Frelserin. Savior, did it save you?
It did. It saved this album, which was going down a very dark hole. I like this one builds, but in a way that's less pompous and obvious. In a way, mm-hmm. I think I like that it starts with that sort of more mournful sounds, and there's some harsher sounds in here. Yeah, very good.
Yeah, it's dark, but yet not that dark, if that makes sense. It's the way they've got the organ in, it feels like a bit gothic, maybe.
That stark organ sound is nice.
Yeah, that kind of chamber, coal chamber, chamber sound. And it sounds quite minimal as well, even though there's still a lot going on, because his vocals are pushed quite far up front in this, it feels like a bit more personal, maybe.
Yes.
And it's quite a, like, quite cool, pretty sound still, but it just feels like he means it. And that authenticity almost kind of, you know, comes through and shakes you a little bit.
Much
more
so
than the last song.
Yeah, like you said, that building of the other instruments behind his vocal, it's not as ostentatious as that previous track. You know, with all these just like big sloppy, sloopy, syrupy strings,
yeah,
just piling on. It's a bit more subtle, this.
Mm, yeah. Okay. Well, let's move on to the next track, and this is called. Right. Let's see if you can guess. Again, what the translation
is. I'll translate,
is.
Yeah. Everyone. Don't worry.
Nye battery.
No batteries.
So close.
Oh,
so close.
My battery.
No. One more go.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.
Think about it.
Batteries.
No, batteries is right. Oh. The first word. First letter. First word.
I love batteries.
Yes. No, it's not. It's not. It's new batteries.
I thought it might be like a Philip K. Dick kind of.
No.
You know.
Title. No, it's not. So new batteries. Let's give it a listen. Batteries. Do you feel like you need new batteries after that?
I feel like the Duracell bunny. I could go and go and go listening to this music all night.
Well, would this be one of your favourite tracks off the album then?
Possibly so far, yeah, I think so. I've got a little bit of kind of something creeping in that makes me feel a bit like a little bit cynical because you're starting to see the template. Mm-hmm. Of the songs, you know, it's build it up, instrumentation comes in about halfway through, mm-hmm. and then big ending, but it does sound good. I really liked the sort of first minute or two with this just sort of like meandering, almost kind of like folk sound. Like, I don't know anything about Icelandic or like Scandinavian folk, other than what I've heard through probably like Bjork albums. But it reminded me of some of that. And some of those discordant kind of weird noises kind of reminded me a bit of like Indian Raga.
Okay.
So I liked all of that. I thought that was really quite cool and interesting. And when those drums came in, they were really quite harsh.
Yeah, very upfront, yeah.
In your face. Really jarring, which I liked.
Yeah.
Kind of shocked me. Out of my like nice sort of torpor that it's built up.
Well, they feel like bombs going off almost.
Right? Yeah.
It's especially just after you've had that kind of like quite, you know, that introduction. And then just suddenly it's like boom, boom, boom.
It's weird hi-hats as well, like weird use of hi-hats.
Mm.
Just like sort of like clasping and almost like slashing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because I feel like it's one of the more different songs. And again, as you said, the template is still there. And, you know, and it's nothing against, I mean, obviously, like there are bands like, I don't know, Mogwai or something that do a lot of this still to this day. And you can tell they've kind of inspired by them. I don't know if they're inspired by them or if they were around the same time. But just having that whole, as you said, it's kind of starting off very gently. And then there's something really big and like grabs you by the throat a little bit at the end. And then it kind of drifts back off. That kind of journey is kind of like a classic Sigur Rós template. But again, just it's still, there's nothing wrong with that. It works, you know, and it works here as well. It's a bit, again, it feels quite dark again. And it feels a little bit more stranger than the other songs on the record. Mm. And there's a point where, yeah, when you think, oh, I'm a little bit, you know, I'm a little bit done with this song, like, you know, whatever, that's when the drums get you and you're just like, oh, right. Oh, hold on. There's a whole, like, other side to this song I wasn't even, you know, aware of, wasn't even thinking about until, you know, that percussion came in. Yeah, so I think for me it's like one of the sleeper hits, I'd say, of the album, if that makes sense. Like, one of the ones that you don't really think that much of, but then when you go back and listen to it, you think, actually, that was really good. Why don't I listen to that track more on this album?
New batteries, please.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, cool. Should we move on to the next one?
By all means, let us know what it's called.
The next one? Right, let's see if you can work this out.
It's got a letter in it that I don't even know what it is.
Yes, good point. Hijartau Hamast, and then in brackets, bam, bam, bam.
Yeah.
Now, I think you could work this out.
Yeah, no, I know what this one is.
Go on.
That's, so this is actually a cover, and it's Venga Boys, Boom, Boom, Boom.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, the bam, bam, bam is actually boom, boom, boom. Correct. Okay. So could you get the first two words, do you think?
I mean,
Hijartau Hamast or something. Hamast. Hijartau Hamast.
Could it be?
Think about the first word.
Hijartau Hamast. Sweet paprika, like? Hummus?
Yes.
No. It doesn't sound like anything.
The heart pounds. Boom, boom, boom. Hijartau.
Heart sounds pounds.
Like, sounds like heart a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, let's give it a listen. Boom.
It's quite
boom,
easy, really.
Boom,
this
boom.
Is Icelandic.
It's true. Well, I don't know why anyone. Who is learning Icelandic that doesn't live in Iceland? That's a question.
We should do it at school. It's easier than French.
Yeah. Well, if you're one of those people who learn Icelandic and you're not from Iceland, hit us up. Here we go.
Fetus in my womb.
That
was a good one.
Yeah, do you like that?
Yeah, very surprising at this point in the album to have new instruments and sound introduced. But I liked that, like blues harmonica, very unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
And
a bit more of a jazzy organ.
Yeah, jazzy and jazzy drums, and a kind of like almost like 70s kind of funk bass line.
Mm, yeah.
And then again, I like some of this ambient noise that comes in after the song is essentially done. Horrible, crunchy,
yeah,
digital,
like noise,
harsh noise literally. And stuff, which I like.
Yeah, it's like the CD's been fucked or something.
Yeah.
I am okay with it. It's not one of my favourite ones, I think, because there's so much going on and there's not really a hook that much or anything really. I'm not too hot on the jazziness of the number, but it's like kudos for like doing trying something out, whatever. You know, sounds a bit more experimental maybe.
Yeah. I can see why you don't like this one.
Yeah.
Like, it hasn't got that big emotional hook that the other songs have.
Mm.
And it doesn't
it's
have,
interesting.
Yeah.
It's still interesting to listen to. I'm just like, yeah, I don't know, like, what is it? Like, what am I really listening to? Is it just being different for the sake of putting in some different bits? And I think that's, it feels like a bit like a scrapbook of ideas that they kind of had and put together.
Yeah.
Rather than some coherency as a song. Again, I don't mind it.
Could have come out of a jam or something.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just like, I just feel like there's stronger things kind of going on elsewhere.
I like stuff like this on an album though, where, you know, it gives you a bit of a break from some of that really intense, like, emotive stuff.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, it does work. It works for what it needs to do. And as you said, it's cool just to mix it up a little bit at this point. So it does the job well. It's just not something I would, you know, specifically put on to listen to.
I'm anticipating we might springboard into another huge opus next, though.
Well, let's find out. Because this next one, it's called... See if he gets this. Fiora Veltilofterasa?
Could that be live well until you die?
You'll never get this. I tell you what, here's a clue. It sounds a little bit like Lufthansa.
fly with Lufthansa. Ready made song for an advert. No, I don't know. No idea.
Good weather for an airstrike.
Oh, really? That's very good.
Yeah. So right,
could have been the soundtrack to the volcanic ash cloud of 10 years ago. Remember that one?
Yes. They preempted it. Remember it? Yeah. I just been in Iceland like 6 months before and remember that he was driving us around and going, like, some of these are set to explode any second.
Oh, wow.
We've been waiting for, like, this one to explode for ages or whatever. And then, like, 6 months later, it did. So...
screwed everything up.
Yeah, he got his wish. So, yeah. All right, let's listen to Fealty Lufthansa. Think of the airstrike. Is it good weather?
Yeah, very good. Again, this is sort of like more what I expect of them. It took a long while to get going, which I like.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite brave. It's like 2 minutes of almost nothing happening. And then just that nice sort of piano balladry is almost just like in the background for 4 minutes.
Yeah.
It's like nearly half of the running time.
Yeah.
And then I liked, you know, there's a string heavy at the end, but not in that way that's very like heavy-handed. I liked it. It's kind of like, I don't know how to explain it, like busy shrill strings.
Yeah.
That were very pretty.
What did you think about the end?
Yeah, I liked it. You know, just like sounded like everything that I thought they would do and just building up another big... epic ending.
Yeah. I have to say, I don't really like this track.
How come?
I think it's too... I don't mind that it's too long. As you said, I quite like the fact that it's almost like, yeah, as you said, like minutes go by and nothing is really happening. But again, just when those strings come in, I'm just like, I don't... It's the shrillness of it, like, just kind of grates me a little bit. And like when it has those like sweeping guitars coming in, Yeah. Even though they're not there that for that much, it just reminds me of like, oh yeah, that's the Sigur Rós stuff I like. More than these shrill violins or whatever. It's like, yeah, more, okay, I guess. But that stuff, I'm like, okay, that's cool. But I did like it, like the frenziedness of it towards the end. For some reason, that always, like, whenever I listen to this song, that frenziness like kind of wakes me up a bit, and like, it makes me think, oh yeah, cool. Like it's just gone off on one. And almost like the antithesis of what I've just listened to, which is these, you know, oh, this big orchestral sound. But this is the kind of, again, this is the Sigur, and it sounds like I'm mainly hung up about the orchestral side of it, and I'm not. It's just, don't find it pleasing to my ear particularly. And I thought, again, it was okay, but again, I just don't, it didn't really wow me. I didn't really feel anything particularly amazing. I just felt like it was, again, more like the album taking me through a journey, and this is like another chapter of it, rather than it being like a song on its own right. I don't know. Just not, it's not, I didn't really dig it as much as the others.
Yeah, I thought, you know, it's fairly pedestrian for what we've heard so far, but I don't think it's not as offensive as the earlier one.
No.
Star Alpha.
Yeah. No.
It's the longest song here.
Yeah. And that's mainly because, you know, not much happens. truth to tell.
That 4-minute intro.
Yeah. But again, it's like whenever I'm saying stuff like this, it's not, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just like, the quality that's the bar of Sigur Rós for me is quite high. So whenever I hear things like this, I'm just like, yeah, it's okay. It's okay. It's a Sigur Rós song that's like, you know, I'm sure they, as you said, like maybe it was in a jam, they knocked it out in whatever. But yeah, it's, I prefer big sweeping guitars and like hard hitting drums and, you know, crying vocals kind of thing, rather than these like happy little ditties with the violins, which I seem to have got, yeah, seems to, making it sound like that's my main problem. Like I'm anti-violin.
Yeah.
Maybe I am.
You hate them. Isn't that the plot to the Queen musical? Some evil overlords like banned all the violins or something. And the Queen have to...
We Will Rock You. I've not seen
bring
it.
Bring music back. Or is that the... Actually, I'm thinking of the cartoon series of the early 90s. Oscar's Orchestra or something.
Oh, God, don't remember that.
It was a piano that had to save music, been banned by a fascist regime.
Well...
And you're the fascist.
Well, yeah.
Who hates violins.
Well, I just want more other stuff. If people want to...
You will not have this violin, Sigur Rós.
People want to defy me and get better music out there, I'm all for it. Go ahead. I'll play the scapegoat. So the next track, Dan, the next track is Olsen...
I can pronounce this one.
Oh, go on then.
Olsen.
Yes. Who's your favourite Olsen?
Mary-Kate.
Of course. Of course it is.
The other one...
Whoever she is.
Nothing. Pales in comparison.
So people might
have... Why have they done a song about the Olsen twins?
Why wouldn't you?
I mean, they hadn't really achieved very much at this point in their career, had they?
They had a hit TV show at this point. It's probably the most famous they were. It was maybe around this point. Aren't they like 45 now or something as well? They're not really old.
Yeah, actually, to be fair, they were 13 when this came out.
Yeah.
So they'd already done loads. They were in decline.
Yeah, they were already on their way out. Get out of here, Olsen twins. But before you do, here, we're going to write this song, Olsen. Apparently, the lyrics for this and the last bit of A Gettysburgen, the title track, it's just gibberish. And it's called Von Lenska, apparently, is the kind of nickname they gave to this gibberish language, which their next album, which is the Brackets album I was telling you about, was complete gibberish as well. So people think, because obviously people can't speak Icelandic, they just presume it's Icelandic. It's not. They're just making you know, the rest of it's Icelandic, but just for this song and a little bit of the other song, it's just complete gibberish. A gibberish that they've given the name. And
I like that. I like people playing with and mocking language in that way.
Yeah. And their whole thing with it was that it was to kind of just go, it's kind of like scatting almost, and like the good scatting, the jazz scatting, not the bad scatting.
like Scatman John.
In a sense,
whose work just was taken forward by Jonathan Davis of Korn.
That's true. Yeah, it was. Yeah. it's true. And just the fact that it's more about using your voice as an instrument that's presenting the emotion and stuff rather than the words of it. The vocabulary has gone, and it's more just the noise of it that's kind of becoming another sound within the mixture of the music. And yeah, so it's interesting.
No, cool. So, that is interesting. I'll keep an ear out then for, I'll see if I can detect any difference between the Icelandic and the gibberish.
Yes, sure. See if you can. And this is, well, that's in the next track. All the lyrics for this is gibberish. So let's listen to one New York minute. Firstly, the New York Minute, one New York Minute, I said, but New York Minute reference was because the Olsen twins were in a film called New York Minute.
Thanks for explaining that. I'm not overly familiar with the work of the Olsen twins.
Well, so there you have it. This is how it is.
Not what did you think? Age of about 10, anyway. What did I think? I thought you can have Christmas, but have you had an M&S Christmas? Sounds like the advert to some kind of high street supermarket trying to sell you on their very opulent luxury Christmas puddings.
Yeah. God, it really is a problem, isn't it? The fact that adverts just completely hijacked the sound.
Yeah.
It's totally commercialised it.
There's some sort of woodwind stuff going on in here. It sounded quite like
fluty.
Yeah, very fluty. And his vocal was quite impish here. It was all a bit Return to Fern Gully for me, this song.
Yeah, fair enough. Impish. It reminds me, do you watch The American Office?
Yeah.
It's an episode where Dwight comes in as like a Dutch Santa or something and says whether people are impish or good. And if you're impish, you get whacked by a twig or whatever, a stick, a branch or whatever. He's going red. I deem you impish.
I haven't seen that one. That sounds good.
It's good. It's a good one. I'm probably going to point out, you're going to guess what I'm going to say about this song.
Say it anyway. I know what you're going to say, but say it anyway.
No, I actually like this song and I like the violins in it.
So no, you don't.
I do. I like it. Okay. And I think it's because I like the bass line. I like the way it starts. I like everything about it. And when the orchestra comes in, I don't mind it. I actually think it feels like the jubilancy of it almost works because of how it started. Mm-hmm. And I like the fact that it's got like the pan pipes or whatever and all these little bits to it. And the fact that it ends as if it's like in the middle of like a market, like they're busking or something. I enjoyed that. Like it's this big sound and it's almost as if like the world is just going by and, you know, it doesn't mean anything. It's nothing. It's happened. It's a moment in time that's gone. Everything just continues. Yeah. And almost that dismissive nature of it but I'm putting it, being aware of it, that self-awareness, and putting it at the end of the song, if I don't know if that's what they were going for. I was just like, that's a really cool way to kind of end it. Yeah, so I quite liked it.
Yeah, it's interesting with these, I don't know what to call them, but these sort of segues, I suppose, at the end of the songs, you know, like some of that digital noise at the end of one and just sort of like ambient clattering. I think that's quite cool how it comes off the end of these like big, almost like very grandiose crescendos. These are very small kind of like vignettes, I suppose you call
mm-hmm.
them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does
just
make
preparing
it feel...
you for the next big thing to begin.
Yeah, and it does kind of, and again, this is the thing with albums, especially like when, even back then, which isn't that long ago, but still, it's an album was an album. It was thought of as one piece, like not like, okay, an album is 10 individual tracks just put together. Like this is a body of work. And it's interesting because it's like, I think how like people obviously these days, how they consume music is on a track by track basis. Yeah. And I know we were joking about how I was listening to, what's his name? Never Gonna Rick Astley. And he was saying how like he's releasing a best of, and he was saying like, what's the point of me releasing a best of, because there are just Spotify playlists or whatever that just do that anyway. Like, why would you buy it? So it's like he's done a new song, and like there's a B-side, which is all the songs but done acoustically, that, you know, whatever. It's a whole new thing to give it a bit more interest. And it's interesting because he's right. Like, you know, the idea that of an album is almost dead, really. And he's talking about best of, but essentially the idea of putting... you know, you're thinking more of like a track by track nature. Like, what are the tracks that work that people will listen to and put on their playlists, and, you know, mix it in with everything else, rather than being like, okay, we've got 10 tracks. This is how each track will go into the next one. It, you know, it's a body of work. It's a piece of art that we are creating, not just like a playlist, essentially.
Yeah. And when that form of commercialization finally takes over, which it will, albums like this simply won't be made.
Yeah, well, I wonder if it's like, you know, I'm very much a believer in the fact that everything going full circle, and maybe there'll be like a return to it where people will get a bit sick of just like listening to stuff on playlists or whatever and doing X, Y, Z and coming back to the whole like, you know, 10 tracks that need to be played together in this order. They need to link one to the other, whether there'll be like a return to that, and that'll be seen as like almost like a new different way of doing things. Do you know what I mean?
Maybe. It's happened before.
Hope. Yeah. Because there is like, I do miss that side of it. And I think, you know, there's certain nuances that are kind of left out that we're seeing here, for instance, as you said, like the way that tracks will end, begin, you know, compared to what's happening before or after. Like it, you know.
Yeah.
It's that's, looking at the bigger picture.
That's why you need to rush out and buy this. On double LP.
Mm.
Two slabs of vinyl, my friends. Doesn't fit on one, it's too long. Double album. Hit that up.
Yeah, it is too long. What did you think about the gibberish?
I couldn't discern it at all. It was just, you know, the point they're making was very valid because...
Yes.
Yeah.
Because you had no idea.
No
so
idea.
We're going on to the next track, which is Agatus Virgin, or however I said it before, Agatus Virgin. Which again, as we spoke about before, means a good beginning or like an all right start, depending on translation or whatever you talk to. And yeah, apparently this, the whole reason the album and the song was called this is because they showed this to a friend of theirs. This was the first song they did. And he said, I go to Spurgeon, whatever, like as in like good beginning, like a good start.
Huh.
And so they're like, well, why don't we call the song that? And then why don't we call the album that?
I do like that something could have been lost in translation there.
Yeah.
Where you're like, good beginning, okay, start. I imagine them going, yeah, it's all right. It's all right. It's all right to start. It's all right for the first thing you've done.
Yeah.
Hopefully it'll get better.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, cool. Well, let's give it a listen. did you think? Was it a good beginning, even though it's like kind of at the end of the album?
Yeah, it was a good thing. The song had a good beginning. I liked that, you know, it's very pretty and everything, but there was some really sour chords in there.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of, they're unexpected when it, yeah, when it happens, you're kind of like, ooh, which is good in my book because it stops it from being too pedestrian and it was getting a bit sweet. It did make me realise sometimes when he starts singing, I acknowledge that his voice is such a fundamental part of the overall sound.
Yeah.
But sometimes I just want to slap him.
Right.
Which happened here when he started singing.
Mm.
But then I got over it.
Yeah, I kind of understand that. Yeah. I mean, it's like, it, sonically, if we're talking about like frequencies, his singing is integral to how it works just because it's, like, you've got that big, sweeping, usually quite dark organ or deep bass sound. And then, you know, he's because his frequency, he's literally singing so high, like really like top end.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of weirdly like makes it bigger by just balancing it out.
Yeah, but makes sense.
Yeah, you're right in a sense of like sometimes you're like, oh, here he is.
Yeah.
Here we go. But I think I quite like this song and it's very simple. It's not, you know, it's not like a big epic opus like some of their other stuff. It feels like something a bit, as you said, it's kind of like borderline saccharine almost, but doesn't quite get there. And it's just quite nice. It's quite relaxing and just blissed out as you listen to it, really.
It's quite nice at this point in the album, I think. A bit more low-key.
Yeah.
Did you pick up on that, like, that sour chord?
Yeah, I can see what you mean, yeah. Yeah, it's still, like, kind of in the same key, I think, but it's, yeah, it's doing something that's kind of not what your brain would automatically go to.
Yeah, it just goes somewhere a bit, like, emotionally, it's a bit like, a bit of a lurch.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just anyway. I like stuff like that anyway, that kind of feels a bit off.
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of adds to that kind of almost sadness as well.
Yeah.
But it's just like it's not quite hitting the note you want it to. There's something quite sad just in that in and of itself.
Yeah, exactly. You don't get that fulfillment you're expecting.
Yeah. Exactly. Right, so now we come to the end of the track, of the album, sorry, and this is called Avalon, which doesn't have any, it's just nonsense, again.
It's the name of a Roxy Music album.
Yeah. Is it? Well, it was the name of, I worked for a company called Avalon, I think, back in the day.
Well, it's probably in testament and tribute to one of those things. So keep that in mind as you listen, and maybe we'll give... he'll give us a clue in the lyrics.
Yeah, maybe. So here you go. Are you having a laugh? It's Avalon. So what a lovely ending to the album.
It was.
Did you like that?
I did. That's that kind of vaporwave sound that we both enjoy. Mm. It sounds like it might be something that they came up maybe with the producer as an experimentation in the studio. Mm-hmm. And with those like sort of weird bangs at the end.
Yeah.
Like they're just trying some sounds out and see what works. But I really liked it. And
well, do you know what's funny? Sorry, go on.
Yeah, carry on.
You know what's funny is that it's actually a different take of the instrumental part of the song that we both probably hated the most.
Huh?
Which is Starov, the Staring Elf. It's just slowed down.
Really?
Just taken the tape, really, and just slowed it down, yeah.
They should have done that for the whole song.
but yeah, I quite like the way it's like, again, it leaves it on a very strange note and something that's a little bit dark and a little bit off and a little bit weird and a bit like a bit noise, basically.
Totally.
And it's not really how you'd expect an album like this to kind of end. But
no,
it feels appropriate for like what we've listened to before because it's an... It's quite experimental and there's a lot of experimental stuff to it. And ending on a track like this gives it, puts its feet like firmly in the fact that, you know, it's experimenting, literally. It's an experimental album almost.
Nicely put. Oh. Yeah. I didn't expect the album. I thought it was going to go out on a big, big orchestral high. So this is very, very welcome.
Mm.
I was kind of thinking I would like this track or a track sounding like this to have appeared maybe earlier to break up again some of the sounds.
Yeah, maybe a shorter version thereof or something.
Yeah, but I definitely wouldn't want to actually take this song and not have it be the closer.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see what you mean. So, something a bit different.
Good decision-making from the Ross boys.
Yeah, really was. Ross boys. Get out. So that's it. So we've listened to the entire album. Dan, what do you want to sum up your thoughts?
I think it's more experimental than I anticipated it was going to be. Yeah, like I said when we started out, I based a lot of assumptions on bits and bobs that I heard at the time. So glad to hear that there's a bit more depth. And I really liked some of the, like instrumentation and sonic textures here. Especially when they got away from that too rigid kind of, you know, build up strings, high voice, massive epic ending kind of thing. I think my favourite songs were that Nye Battery and Bum Bum Bum. Mm,
the boom boom booms. Yeah. It's for me. It's not my favourite Sigur Rós album. I think the one after this, the Brackets one, is probably my favourite Sigur Rós album. But I would probably say it's my second. And it's, as I said, it's like, I feel like here they know what sound they are making, basically. You know, obviously they do. But I like the idea that with this, bear in mind, their second studio album, they're already trying new things and just seeing what, you know, what more they can do, how can they add to stuff. But yeah, I think they're still, and this is the thing, like they're still, there's an element where they're still hanging on to like, how do I put this? The idea they want to make something quite fanciful almost. And is that part of me? It's just like, forget that, forget it. Go down the moody, dark underbelly.
Yeah.
And explore that because that's more what I'm about. And do more with your guitars, basically. And essentially that's what they did in the next album. And that's why this is still a super great album, but the next album is like one of my favorite albums of all time. And this is such a great, you can clearly see it. It's such a great pathway into it. And yeah. And overall, as you said, like there's, I don't know what would be my favorite track on it, you know, because as you said, looking back on it, just being so aware of the fact that it's been used in so many different things has kind of ruined it a little bit.
Mm.
Doesn't feel as original. So like something like Sven-Göran Eriksson, Sven G. Engler, whatever, would have probably been maybe my favorite track on the album, but I can't listen to it because it's just like I'm watching a like 7 minute, listen to a 7 minute O2 advert or something.
Yeah. Or a wildlife documentary.
Yeah. Or like, yeah, BBC's output for the next year or something. Yeah. And yes, yeah, so it's kind of ruined it a little bit for me. So it's hard for me to kind of pull out a specific track that I feel was my favorite. But generally speaking, I think it's a really, really great album. And it was definitely one of my favorite albums of that year, 1999 or 2000, however you want to say it. So yeah, I guess that's it. Any final comments?
You know that fetus on the cover?
Mm-hmm.
It's you.
It really is me. Oh, I should say, actually, now that the guy, the artist guy, got back to me whilst I was whilst we were doing this.
Oh wow,
Gotti, and he basically, I was like, oh, can you give us a few words about, you know, the picture for the album and all this stuff? And he lovely guy, just basically said, I'll just send you what I gave for the limited edition or whatever. So I was like, okay. So I'm going to read this out. It's slightly long, but I think it's pretty interesting, to be honest.
Yeah.
So this is from Gotti. I had a post-production and animation company called Nivid and next door to a recording studio called Newlist. We shared a smoking area, and that's where, obviously, he's written this. He's Icelandic, so it's you know, I'll do what I can, but it's not like perfect English. We shared a smoking area, and that's where I met John C. first. He was a part owner in the recording studio, and both companies had just started up, so business was slow. For days, we did nothing but drink coffee and smoke cigarettes. Sigur Rós had just published their first album, Von, and I remember going to this amazing concert in a small chapel in Reykjavik. John C. didn't sing then. He hadn't tried it and had no plans to. They had a girl come in and sing with them called Hera, and sometimes Kishari would help out as well on keyboard, but he wasn't a part of the group then, and of course, Gusty was the drummer. With Von, the band started getting noticed in the underground scene, but it didn't get much radio play, possibly because the recordings weren't that good. They had produced most of it themselves when they didn't really know what they were doing. Maybe that's why John C. wanted to own a part in the recording studio to learn how to produce. After Von and having more access to recording equipment, they did the album Von Brigoy. To me, that album shows how versatile the band's vision and talent is. With the two albums, the band gained audience and respect. They became known, especially in the Icelandic music scene. The band and other musicians hang out in the studio a lot, but business was still slow. John Z did score for some of the TV and commercial stuff my company was doing. I think he did some work for his father's metal shop for extra cash. He's good at making stuff with metal. He did these amazing light sculptures. At once he gave me a collection of real heavy metal shot glasses for Christmas. That sounds cool. Whatever was happening in the studio, I could hear over my work area. So when they started working on what later became Acasti Bijon, I wasn't very excited. To me, it sounded more like what they'd been doing on Von, when I'd hoped for something more like Von Brigo. We should say, what is, like, Von, I know they released Von, and there was a release called Von Brigo, but I didn't realise, I think maybe Von was an EP, maybe? Or Von Brigo, or maybe it was vice versa. Do we
I know? Don't
know.
Von is definitely album length.
Yeah.
As is Von, the other one, which is apparently recycled bin.
Yeah.
Weird. But I think it's remixes.
Okay.
Which makes sense. Yeah, recycled.
Right. But they kept working it, and I think the whole process took over a year. During that time, being next door, I was repeatedly asked for comments, and I must say now, I thank God that none of my comments had any impact on the band whatsoever, except for encouraging John C. to sing more. I don't know if that's how you say his name. That's me saying that. Towards the end of Agatis Bujun production, I'd moved to another company. John C. came for a visit and mentioned something about me doing the artwork for the cover. He left me with a CD of what the recording sounded like then. I'd given him a portrait of himself as a skinny giant holding a butterfly as a Christmas gift, and he asked for something similar. As he left, I gave him a large box of instant noodle soup that I had just done some commercial for. The date had expired, but it kept him alive for months as he didn't have much cash and was almost living in the studio. I was more than happy to do the artwork. The whole band had become my friends, and each and every one of them is a unique talent that has a kind of giving vision of the world. They'd poured their hearts and souls into this, and now it's time to do my bit. My only problem being that I was working a lot and didn't have much extra time on my hands, and I knew they didn't have the money to pay for the work, and also I didn't believe the album would sell. Back then, editing and doing animation on computer would require a lot of rendering time. That's when the computer calculates changes in between frames. Sometimes I would have to wait for hours, and I used that time to draw. So I'd sit in front of the computer with a sketch pad and pen and listen to the CD Johnsy gave me. When the computer would start to render, I would draw. I listened to the CD all day, and by the third day, I realised that I was hooked. Even after spending a whole year of listening to Agueche's version in the making, when it all came together, the quality, uniqueness and the depth of this sound was so amazing that I was mesmerised. Every pen stroke in the original drawings is done with the sound of Agueche's version in my ear. And that's it.
That's cool that he drew it to the music.
Mm.
You don't often, I don't know, maybe it happens more than I am aware of, but...
Yeah, well, I think they, you know, commission artists, right, and say, like, this is the vibe, but I don't know, I don't really know how it works.
Sitting there listening to it while you're drawing, there's something very romantic about that.
Yeah, and something honest, authentic as yeah. well.
That's really cool of him to share that.
Yeah, it's good. So that's it. Sigur Rós. And yeah, so for further listening, I think we should do the next Sigur Rós album at some point because, yeah, it's a real treat.
Yeah, let's do it.
But yeah, that's it for now. So Dan, where can people find you?
Dreadful Discs on Instagram. And I've got a YouTube channel as well now.
Yep. How's that going? Have you put one up lately?
Had a little pause towards the end of 2019. And I've actually recorded a backlog of stuff.
Okay. So at some
point,
you're ready
to go. Yeah, at some point I'll probably, maybe at the end of this month, I'll do a sort of bit of a relaunch.
Mm. Cool. And if you like this, me and Dan will be starting up a separate podcast, a little comedy jaunt, which I've been talking about on the minisodes as well. So that'll be coming out soon. And yeah, but as always, you can go to newwinter.com. We need some more ratings and reviews. If you hate this, don't bother. But if you love it, then can you please leave a positive review on whatever platform you use? Apple Podcasts is the usual one because that's the most used podcast platform. But you can email us at newwinterpodcast@gmail.com, Instagram newwinter, Twitter newwinter, patreon.com/newwinter. We've got some exclusive stuff up there. And yeah, and that's it, I think. So thanks very much, and happy ending to a good beginning.
Thanks for listening, guys. And if you enjoyed the show, then remember to rate and review us or go to patreon.com/newwinter to find out how you can get exclusive content. See ya.
Winter. Culture.